Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos daf Kuf Yud Ches, final daf of the 15th parak of the Masechta. We fell a bit behind. We're on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. We're discussing animosity, national animosity that exists between five sets of women: a woman and her mother-in-law, a woman and her and her sister-in-law, her co-wife, her sister-in-law, meaning her brother-in-law's wife. And finally, Bas Bala, her stepdaughter. So the natural animosity exists between her and these five women, and as a result of the natural animosity that exists, so therefore they cannot testify upon for one another. Although we learned back in the 10th parak, and we continue learning in this parak, that a woman can testify on behalf of another, and that's generally true. And the opening of the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph was Hakol Ne'emanim La'ida. Almost everybody is allowed to testify on her behalf, except, and these are the exceptions, these are the five women that cannot testify for one another. You remember the Gemara yesterday, we saw the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda had another two women, but it's not really an addition of two more women. It's just simply a reflection of, just like there's a natural animosity that exists between a mother-in-law to her daughter-in-law, so too it goes in the other direction as well. And just like a stepdaughter has a natural animosity to her stepmother, so it's reflected as well. The animosity is reflected. One of the things we learned back in the Mishnah is that not only is there a natural animosity between a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law, but there's also natural animosity between a woman that could potentially become a co-wife. In other words, the Mishnah discussed a case where one woman's going to testify about the death of her, not her husband, but of her brother-in-law. So, meaning that if that would be the case, so then the two sister-in-laws would end up becoming co-wives, and because that position can easily be forecasted, so the Mishnah says therefore there's a natural animosity that exists. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. The Gemara now, we're just going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Thank the Looping Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Daf for Bilin Lazdech and Ishmas. Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. The Gemara on the bottom of the Amud says, Amar Vach, Amar Avia, Bayim, Bama Rava. They asked the following question there to Yisrael. Chamosa Abala Achim Ikan Mahu. Okay, we talked about potential sister-in-laws becoming co-wives. What about a potential mother-in-law? Now, I don't want to say anyone can become a potential mother-in-law, but in other words, do we forecast future mother-in-laws, and do we say because of the easy prognostication, is there a natural animosity that exists between she and her, even though the relationship currently is not mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, but with a simple way of forecasting that she's going to become a mother-in-law, is there already a natural animosity that exists? That's the Gemara's question. Mimaska adaita demizbal v'nafla kamayavam, meaning, look, let's say that the husband dies, and if the husband dies, so then automatically, you know, through Yibum, through the mitzvah of Yibum, she then is going to go to the brother-in-law. So now, it's the brother-in-law's mother-in-law. Okay, I know now we're getting a little bit complicated in family relationships, but it's the brother-in-law's mother-in-law who's looking at this woman. Currently, she's not my daughter-in-law, but through the mitzvah of Yibum, she's going to become my daughter-in-law. So now, because of that, do we say that there's going to be a natural animosity that currently exists? So the Gemara says, "Imaska adaita demizbal v'nafla kamayabam v'sanyala." So does that mean now, because of the forecasting, she's hating her now based on future events that may or may not happen? Or the Gemara says, maybe no. Maybe the only animosity that exists is only when we're currently related. We're currently mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. But if we're only going to be a future mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, and only in the event that your husband dies, so then there's not going to be a natural animosity. That's the Gemara's question. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here. Amra meis ba'li v'achakach meis chamit. So she comes back from a trip and she says the following. This is a Mishnah. We're going to see this Mishnah later this morning. She testifies about the death of her husband and the death of her father-in-law. Okay, what's the halacha? Tinase v'titok suvasa v'chamosa asura. As far as herself is concerned, her testimony for herself is fine. What about the fact that she's also testifying that her father-in-law died? Well, no. In other words, like we learned, that testimony is not going to be believed. She's not going to have credibility because, again, for natural animosity for a mother-in-law. Fine. Now, that's it. So it's a straightforward Mishnah. We're going to see the Mishnah later on. What is the Gemara trying to prove? What the Gemara is suggesting, right, the Let me read inside and then I'll explain. My time, a chamosa asura. So why is her mother-in-law going to be prohibited? La mishum de amrina lo ba'ala meis v'lo chamia meis. Maybe the truth of the matter is nobody died. Her husband didn't die. Her father-in-law, meaning my husband, didn't die. V'had de kamrach l'kukula chamosa hu de kamechavna. So the and she's doing it just basically to get her mother-in-law. Okay, so it's to really stick it to her mother-in-law, so she's going to say that her father-in-law is dead. And then all I got to do in this plan, in this great scheme of hers, is come back, testify about the death of her husband and her father-in-law, even though neither of them died. She knows the truth. Her mother-in-law is then going to remarry, and then her mother-in-law is going to be totally out of the picture. Okay. And again, what's the Gemara trying to show from all this? What the Gemara is trying to indicate is that even though there's no current animosity, but because of a future animosity, because of a future relationship, so therefore they hate each other right now. Okay. Now, this part's a little bit tricky. I understand in the question the Gemara asked, where they currently are not mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, and only because of the possible death of her husband, and then the mitzvah of Yibum that's done, they're going to become mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. So I understand over there. Over here, they're currently mother-in-law, daughter-in-law. Why does the Gemara think that this is a proof to the question? The Gemara thinks, and Rashi, I'm just saying out Rashi outside. You can see Rashi inside for this explanation. The Gemara currently thinks right now that as long as the husbands are away, they don't hate each other. Meaning that what the Gemara is thinking is that things are going to be a little bit calmer while her husband is away. And why? Why are things going to be calmer? Because, right, remember, the whole reason of the animosity, the source of the animosity we saw yesterday, is because they tell on each other. Okay, I know that. Right? I know, you shouldn't tell Lashon Hara. But in other words, what's happening is that with everything that the daughter-in-law is doing wrong, the mother-in-law is there tapping his son on the shoulder saying, could you look at her? This is what you marry. This is what replaces me. So the but if the husbands are away, so maybe then there's no animosity. That's what the Gemara is thinking, and then the Gemara says, and you see that even though currently there's no animosity, but as long as there's going to be a future animosity, i.e., when they come back, they currently hate each other. That's what the Gemara thinks. To which the Gemara says, Dilmashani Asam. The Ragish Leitzara. The Gemara says it's really not comparable because here, in this case, in other words, in the Mishnah we quote later on, they're currently our mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, and they've already had they had it out with one another before. So it's not like we're gonna look at the husbands going away and saying, hey, there's a total abatement of the animosity that exists between the mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. It doesn't work that way. Meaning they are mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, they have an animosity towards one another, and it continues even while the husband's away. So the Gemara says it's not comparable, so the Gemara leaves the question unresolved, and the Mishnah later on is not approved.
It's not a future animosity.
Yeah, correct.
No discussion about a father.
Now we made this observation yesterday, and it was said brilliantly yesterday. It's a woman's thing. No, you're right. We observed this yesterday. We're up to the next Mishnah. We're on Kuf Yizayin Amud Beis. We're starting the Mishnah. It's the Mishnah is going to sound like we've seen this Mishnah before, and quite frankly, that's because we have. Eidechad Omer Meis. Sorry. I'll read the words. Eid Omer Meis, so one witness says that the husband died, which an Eid is Isha, that's good. Venises, and then she remarries. Uba Echad V'Amar Lomeis. And along comes another witness and really upsets everything because he says that, no, the husband didn't die. I'm testifying that the husband didn't die. Harizelo Seitze. This woman's good. She's fine. She can remain in her state of being married to this other man. And as we'll explain in the Gemara, but let's say it outside right now, because when it comes to allowance for a woman to remarry, one witness serves as a good witness. Once we say that one witness serves as a good witness, halachically speaking, that one is counted as two. Meaning, once the Chachamim extend credibility to one witness, so one basically becomes two. So what's generally the halacha when it's two witnesses against one? We ignore the one. Okay. Stay tuned, we're going to come back, we're going to discuss that in a little bit more detail. So, Harizelo Seitze. Eid Omer Meis, Ushnaim Omer Mlo Meis. But let's say we have the following scenario. Let's say one witness says that the husband died. And then later, two witnesses come along and say, no, the husband's not dead. Oh, now we have a problem. So, Afa Pisha Nisei Teitze. So now we have Edom HaMachishim, we have witnesses contradicting one another. That obviously creates a tremendous problem, because now we simply do not know whether her husband is dead or alive. And therefore, she cannot remain married to this other man, because we simply do not know. We no longer have any proof that her husband's dead. Let's say two witnesses say that the husband died, and one witness says that he's not dead. Even if she's not yet remarried, she can now remarry. Okay, which the Gemara later on is going to point out, that part of the Mishnah seems to be so obvious, so why would the Mishnah need to record that? Good. Hold that question as we're going to ask it later on. The Gemara right away jumps on the first case of the Mishnah and wonders out loud. In the first case of the Mishnah, what happened? So you had a witness testifying that the husband died. She remarried based on the testimony of the one witness. And then comes along another witness and the Mishnah says, you can ignore that second witness. So the Gemara says, but if you read the Mishnah carefully, it sounds like that we're only going to discredit the second witness only if she already has gotten married. Okay, so time of Denise, halo Nise, lo, halo Tinase. Sounds like from the Mishnah, doesn't say it, but the Diuk is pretty clear. Sounds like from the Mishnah that if one witness says their husband's not dead, if one witness says that her husband died, and she hasn't done anything with that information, and then you have a second witness saying they didn't die, she can't do anything now. She's stuck. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I don't understand. Why should that be? The one witness that we believed originally is treated like two. Even if she hasn't yet remarried based on the testimony of the one, shouldn't we treat that first witness like two? And then the second witness that comes along, shouldn't we discount him? Because it's two against one? So the Gemara says, Hachi Kama. The Gemara says, what a fantastic point. So we're going to have to do the following in the Mishnah. Eidech Amar Meis. Vihiti Ru'a Linase. Here comes the critical component. We've made this point earlier in the Masechta. It's a great review. Let's say a witness comes along and says that the husband's dead. They go to Beis Din. Remember, a witness by itself is insufficient. You need a witness and a Beis Din. Right, we've seen this terminology in the 10th parak. Beis Din has to give a permission. This idea that she can remarry and one witness is really an act of Beis Din. Beis Din needs the one witness, but really it is incumbent upon Beis Din to allow her to remarry. Therefore, the Gemara says that when one witness comes and says her husband's dead, and she goes to Beis Din, and Beis Din now, based on the one witness, gives her permission to remarry. Perfect. Now she has a heter to get married. Now another witness can come along and discredit and invalidate the original witness. Because Beis Din gave that first witness the koach of two witnesses. And when it says lo seitze, it means not a question of exiting or entering into a marriage. It means once Beis Din gives her a heter, she now has a heter. Another witness, a subsequent witness, can't discredit. Good. Ein omer meis pshita. Dein vav shel echa b'makom shnayim. Okay, now we go on to the next part of the Mishnah, and the next part of the Mishnah talks about one and two. So the Gemara says, okay, that seems to be pretty obvious. Two against one, so one's not going to be two. Lo tzricha bipsule edus kedrab nechemya. So the Gemara says, let's learn our Mishnah with a chiddush, and the chiddush goes like this. One witness says that the husband died. Two witnesses said that the husband did not die. Okay, so what bothers the Gemara is, obviously we're going to listen to two over one. Well, the Gemara now is injecting into the Mishnah the following Chiddush. The two that are testifying are not two quote-unquote regular witnesses. They're not Ksherim, they're what we call Psulim. Meaning they're women testifying. Normally, women do not testify in a court of law. But for Eidos Isha, women do testify. For Eidos Isha, the question now that we're going to be dealing with is, how does the Halacha view the two women testifying? Meaning they're given credibility. But do we treat them like quote-unquote regular witnesses? Meaning, Ditanya. Reb Nechemya Amar, Kamakam Shemin Atar Eid Echad, Halach Achar Rav Deyos Vasu Shtei Nashim, B'Ish Echad, Kishnei Anashim, B'Ish Echad. The Gemara quotes a statement to Reb Nechemya that says that when the Torah believes the one witness, meaning, in our discussion of Eidos Isha, where we do afford credibility to people who not normally afford a credibility, i.e. one witness, i.e. a woman. So what we do is halach achar rov deos. Here, we follow opinions. And two women against one man is similar to two men against one man. meaning that when we are looking at Eidus Isha, we don't treat each group like a kat. Normally, in the world of halach hilchos Eidus, when two witnesses are providing information, that's a group of witnesses, that's a kat. Let's say they get they are contradicted by another group of two. Okay, so you have one kat and you have another kat, and they cancel each other out. What if it's two against three? Two against three, same basic halacha. It's one kat against another kat, even though the three outnumber the two, but each one is treated like a group, and it's Eidim HaMachishim Zedzeh. What Rabbi Nechemiah is telling us is that in the world of Eidus Isha, it doesn't work that way. The way it works by Eidus Isha is that if it's two against one, we just simply follow the number of opinions. The number of opinions is that two is greater than one, therefore the two is going to outnumber the one. That's one way to understand our Mishnah. That the two that are coming afterwards are not Eidim Ksherim, they're Eidim Psulim, and we count them as two against one. Even though the two that come subsequently are women, how do I regard two women? In this halacha, in this particular scenario, the two women are treated like two men. Or the Gemara says no. Maybe we won't say that in the Mishnah. And the truth of the matter is that if one witness who comes originally to testify is an eid kasher, even if 100 women can afterwards, 100 women afterwards are classified as a testimony of one. Ela kagon de asa isha miikara. So the Gemara says that maybe the Mishnah is dealing with a case where the first one to testify is not in a man, but the first one to testify is a woman. And as far as Rav Nechemiah is concerned, here's how we're going to understand the statement of Rav Nechemiah. Rav Nechemiah Omer, Kamakum Shemina Torah, Echad Halacha Charov Deos, Vasu Shtei Nashim B'Isha Achas, Kishnei Anashim B'Isha Echad. In terms of the first one who testified was a woman, we believe her, because it's Eidus Isha. The next two that come to testify are two women. How do we treat that? Two against one, where the two are going to outnumber the one. But if the first one to testify was a man, how do we treat the one man who testified? That's like a kat of Edom, like a group of Edom. And the second group that comes to testify, doesn't matter what they are, that's another group. That's a group against a group, and kipago pagadami, leaving us off where we're getting conflicting reports. Unlike in the case where the first one to testify was a woman, then the second group that comes and testifies is two against one. The two are going to outmatch the one. Okay, so those are two ways to understand our Mishnah in light of the fact that the Mishnah at its surface is really pasha. We go with Rabbi Nechemiah. The second version of Rabbi Nechemiah, that if originally the one who comes to testify is a woman, so then two women coming after her would in fact be able to discredit her.
The content of what they say doesn't matter.
Huh?
The content of what either witness says.
Well, of course, the content matters. In other words,
two against one.
We're discussing a scenario where they're contradicting one another. One says he's dead, and the next two that come along and say no, he's not. He's alive. So then the two are going to outnumber the one. And what Rabbi Nechemiah says in our second version is that if the first one to testify was a woman, the second group that testified two women, the two are going to outnumber the one.
It's against what Ullah said, because the two women is considered as one.
No, not necessarily, because what Ullah says could be true regarding a man. Meaning when a man comes and testifies, that man is treated like a group of witnesses. Like a group of witnesses. Okay. Shnei Momer Meis. Continuing now, we're just finishing up. Ma'ika Mashman B'Psul Eidus Chidreb Nechemiah Dazabar Basarav Deos Hainuach. So the Gemara says now, in the last case of the Mishnah, what do we have? Two coming and saying he's dead. One coming along and saying, no, he's not. He's not dead. So what do we say in the Mishnah? Believe the two over the one. What was our problem? Okay, of course. What did you think we were going to say? That's Pashut. And what the Gemara now is already answering is, okay, let's say the first two who came to testify were women. So maybe the Chiddush of the Mishnah is that two women versus one woman. Believe the two women over the one woman. The Gemara says, okay, but we already established that as well. Meaning, at this point in the Mishnah, that's not even a Chiddush anymore. That's also obvious. So the Gemara says, lo kamash malan. Gemara says no. Even in the third case, it is a chiddush because I'll say two trumps one. Two women will trump one woman to be machmir, to establish the fact that the husband is not dead. But here in this last case of the Mishnah, what are we saying? We're saying that two women are coming along and saying he's dead. One woman's coming along and saying he's not dead. What the Chiddush now in the Mishnah is that we're going to believe the two over one, even though that leads us to the conclusion that the husband's dead, she's not allowed to remarry. That's a kula, that's a leniency, and that's the Chiddush of the third case of the Mishnah. Good.
So you say with Reminechemia, that's a good way to say it.
Okay, could talk about confusion. The man's married to two women. They come back from the trip, and now we hear differing reports. One of the women, one of the wives, says, "You know, our husband died." The other wife looks at her in Beis Din and says, "That's funny. No, he didn't. He's alive and well." Okay, zoo. What's the halacha? Okay, it's gonna sound a little bit strange, but it is a logical conclusion. Zoo shomeres meistina say v'tito k'suvasa. So the one woman, the one wife who testified that the husband died, so she can now go ahead and remarry, and not only that, she can even collect her k'suva from the estate of the husband. Good. Zoo shomeres lameis lo tina say v'lo tito k'suvasa. And the one who said that the husband didn't die, well, yeshikoach, you think that the husband's alive and well, so that's great. So now you can't remarry, and needless to say, you're not going to collect your ksuva. Okay. And obviously, I mean, let's just make the point that that's obvious. The one who testified that he's still alive and well is not going to impact the co-wife. And why isn't she going to impact the co-wife? So we go back to what we learned yesterday. It's not going to impact the co-wives because we believe that there is a natural animosity that exists between co-wives, and one co-wife's testimony cannot impact another co-wife's testimony. Good. Let's say you have the two wives coming back, and they both agree that he died. It's just a disagreement in terms of how he died. So one of the wives said that he died naturally in bed, and the other wife said, no, he was killed. It was terrible. Okay. So what do we do now? It's kind of contradictory testimony, but there is a common denominator. They both agree the husband's no longer alive. Just a question of how we got to that point. So Rabbi Meir Omer, Hol Machisho Zuwazu, Hare Elu Lo Yinasu. So Rabbi Meir says they're contradicting one another, and therefore we discredit them. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Hol Zuwazu Modim, Shein Kayim Yinasu. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say, no, look at the common denominator of the testimony. They both agree that he's no longer alive. How we got to that point? Okay, they disagree. But look at the common denominator. And therefore, they both are allowed to remarry. Eid Omar Meis ve'Eid Omar Lo Meis. One witness says that he died, and another witness says he did not die. Isha Omar Meis ve'Isha Omar Lo Meis. One woman says that he died, and another woman said he did not die. Zu lo si nasei. Okay, so the wife cannot remarry because we don't have a clear view of what happened to the man. They can't. Well, hold that question for just a moment. We're gonna deal. Time of the Amra. We start with the Gemara. Time of the Amra lo meis haishtaki tinasei. So the Gemara tries to read into the Mishnah. The Mishnah says one woman. One the first case of the Mishnah. A wife comes and says that our husband died, and the second wife, the co-wife, says no, he didn't die. And what did the Mishnah say? You who declare that he's dead, you can go ahead with your life. You can remarry, you can collect your ksuva. The other one, you're stuck. It sounds like from the Mishnah, reading into the Mishnah, that if the second wife would have said nothing, she can remarry. But we know that's not true. We know that a co-wife cannot testify on behalf of another co-wife. So that bothers the Gemara. Not what the Mishnah says, but what the Mishnah seems to imply. So, time of Amar Lomais, Hai Ishtaki Tinase, Hai Tsari Mi Idel Chaverta. Gemara's bothered. You know, we know that a co-wife cannot testify on behalf of another co-wife. Lomais Itzrichle. So the Gemara says like this. Of course, when one woman testifies about the death of her husband, it will only impact her, not her co-wife. It doesn't matter what the co-wife says, or if she doesn't matter if the co-wife disagrees, or it doesn't matter if the co-wife is silent. Okay, but salkada chamina hamayis. But maybe it goes like this. Maybe the truth of the matter is that really the husband died, and if the husband's really dead, so we understand the wife that says that the husband died because that's actually what happened. What's the other wife doing? Meaning, why is she now saying no? My husband's alive. What she's trying to do is she's trying to torture her co-wife in saying so. Truth of the matter is she's trying to really torture her co-wife. Now here we get into a real lesson in hatred. Hatred is such that if you hate somebody so much, even if it means that you yourself are going to have to suffer, as long as the one I hate suffers as well, so I'm happy.
But there's no impact on her. Doesn't,
of course it's going to impact her. She can't move on with her life.
But the thing is that she couldn't anyway, because she couldn't rely on the successful in the first wife anyway.
Well, she, but
that's
she,
why she's got the husband is still alive.
I'm going to beg to disagree. She could testify herself. She could say that my husband's dead.
If the first wife testified, the second wife can also come and testify?
Sure, sure. On behalf of herself. Absolutely. So the Gemara says, I might have thought that her testimony was nothing more than just a means of torturing her co-wife. But maybe in reality she really agrees. I understand we're going deep into the psychology of people in terms of what hatred is going to inspire people to do. And furthermore, what the Gemara is suggesting, it's just a suggestion, the Gemara is going to back away from it. But what the Gemara is suggesting now is because of this penetrating psychological insight that people torture one another, so maybe we'll really believe her when subsequently she'll later say, oh no, my husband really died. The fact that I said he was alive, I just did that to torture. And what the Gemara is suggesting for a moment is, oh, you know what, that's a good svara. Oh, you're right. So the Gemara says, and by the way, just to make sure that we know that when that hatred will be so strong that even at your own expense, as long as others pay and suffer, so it doesn't matter. The Gemara quotes the ultimate example of this phenomena, Tamut Nafshi and Plishtim Ka'amra, right? Shimshon. So what does Shimshon do as his last act? So he takes down the building together with himself inside the building. Okay, and he kills his enemy. He kills the Plishtim. And he has to die himself. No, but yeah, but the Plishtim died, so good.
But he was going to die anyway.
Okay. Okay, but he did it, though. In other words, he pulled down the building. Okay, you're right. It looked like his fate was sealed. Okay. The Gemara continues. The Gemara says,
"Kamash." The second one is.
It's okay. It's fine.
If the second one is truly seeing that the husband died or alive.
But really doesn't. If the husband died and she comes and she testifies, the husband's dead, so she also can move on with her wife.
So the husband. The second one says the husband did not die. So
right.
If she's truly right, what happens?
When we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. But in other words, we'll go back to the original assumption that the woman who testified the husband died is correct. She's believed. She's given credibility. Okay, so Kamashman, the Gemara says that's a chiddush. Achas omeres meis v'liflog Rabbi Meir bereisha. Look, in the case where there's a disagreement in terms of how the husband died, so Rabbi Meir says they're contradicting one another, we throw it out. The Gemara now wonders, you know, that's funny. In this Mishnah, there were two cases in the Mishnah. In the first case of the Mishnah, we had one woman saying he died and one other woman saying he didn't die. Rabbi Meir was quiet. Rabbi Meir didn't say anything in that case in the Mishnah. And then when we get to a smaller disagreement, which is how he died, Rabbi Meir says, oh, they're contradicting one another. We throw their testimony out. Wouldn't you imagine that Rabbi Meir will also disagree in the first case of the Mishnah as well? Well, then they're not arguing about how he died, but they're arguing about whether or not he's dead. Wouldn't Rabbi Meir say in that case that's Edim HaMachishim Zedza? And wouldn't Rabbi Meir throw out everyone's testimony? It's a powerful question. The Gemara answers. So V'liflog Rabbi Meir Bereisha, Rabbi Amar Rabbi Lazar Ben Machlok Yishnoiv Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimoni. So Rabbi Lazar's answer to the question is, no, the question's stronger than any answer. You're right. Rabbi Meir also argues in that first case as well. In the first case, what Rabbi Meir would say is, oh, you say he's alive, you say he's dead, everyone get out of here. We're not going to believe anybody. They're Edom HaMachishim Zedzeh. Rav Yochanan Omer, and here we get to the more interesting answer. Rav Yochanan says, Afilu Tema Rabbi Meir. No. The first case of the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir is going to agree. This is going to get interesting. How can you tell me that when they disagree to how they died, we throw all the testimony out? When they disagree to whether or not he died, oh, there, okay, we're not going to throw out the testimony. Really? Why should that be? So afil tim Rabbi Meir, baha afil Rabbi Meir, moda dechol lo meis be'edus isha lav hachashehi. What Rabbi Meir is going to argue, again, this is Rabbi Yochanan understanding Rabbi Meir, is that when you declare lo meis, that's not contradictory testimony. Okay, right. Lo meis is not. What is the testimony of lo meis? He's still alive. Okay, meaning at one point in time she definitely saw the husband alive, but that doesn't necessarily contradict the other's mace.
Isn't the chazaka that a person is alive until?
Well, obviously, there's. If we knew what the timeline is, we would know better to know that the lo meis testimony is no good. But if you take a look at Rashi over here, and Rashi's really short, so it's hard to really decipher Rashi. But if you take a look at Rashi over here, why do we discredit the lo meis? Rashi writes, "The rabbanan him knew alakama," because when the first wife testifies, what do the chachamim say? The chachamim say, "Oh, we believe her." And when the Chachamim say we believe her, what do we treat that as? We treat that as two. So it's essentially two versus one. Two versus one, so then we're going to believe the two over the one. As opposed to where they're both saying that he died, they're disagreeing to how he died, Rav Meir says, look, they're both believed, but they're both not telling the same story. I have to throw out the testimony. This is how Rashi understands it. So the Gemara says, "Lav chachashi tanan." The Gemara says, "Let's look at the Mishnah." Eidom ameis veidom alameis isha ameis meis veisha ameis lameis harezu lo sinase. One woman says that he died. Another woman says that he did not die. Not the wife, just Tom, a woman. Or one man says that he died. Another man says that he did not die. So what did the Mishnah say? Lo sinase, can't the wife cannot remarry. So bishlam al Rebbe Lazar stamak Rebbe Meir. So according to Rebbe Lazar, I get it. Who's that? Who's the author of that last part of the Mishnah? It's Rabbi Meir. Because what does Rabbi Meir do with contradictory testimonies? Throws them out. El al Rabbi Yochanan Kasha. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who is the author of that last statement of the Mishnah? Presumably, nobody. Because according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Meir agrees to Rabbi Yehuda and to Rabbi Shimon that when one testimony is that he died and the second testimony is that he did not die, we just simply throw that second testimony out of the window. We just take it out. We throw it out of the court. And if that's true, so then that last part of the Mishnah is not being authored by anybody. The Gemara ends up by saying Kasha. You know, that's difficult. Meaning Rabbi Yochanan's position is hard to defend.
But isn't there a question of
the
timeline?
Yeah, I agree. If we knew what the timeline was,
no,
so then
the witnesses' timeline.
We assume sequential, meaning we assume that they're not coming at the same time. And if the first witness comes and says that he died, so then he's believed. Or in our case, she's believed.
I mean, if it's sequential, then you got to follow Ula's dictum. Two or one, and that's it. And then,
agreed. But as the Gemara pointed out earlier, we're only going to follow Ula's rule if they testify in front of Basin and Basin gave the permission. In that case, that's true. But if it's one and one and Basin didn't yet respond or give that license to remarry, so then you have Edim and Machishim.
In that case, if the first wife comes and said the husband is alive and the second one said he's dead, the first one is accepted, right? Because sequence is important.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay, I don't know. Next Mishnah. Okay, very similar to what we've heard before, because we've quoted this Mishnah before. A woman comes back together, a woman goes away with her husband, and she comes back and she says that my husband died, so she's allowed to remarry, and furthermore, she's allowed to collect a ksuva, vitzarasa asura, but her testimony regarding her co-wife is not going to have any bearing on her co-wife whatsoever. Okay? Good. Covered this point earlier. But here now we're going to advance the discussion in the following way. What if the co-wife is married to a Kohen? Okay, interesting. In other words, now let's look at it from the perspective of both co-wives. One co-wife is saying the man's dead, and Basin says to her, okay, good, We believe you. Go ahead. Now go on with your life. You can remarry and collect your ksuva. Now for the other co-wife, so look at her from her, look at life from her end. My co-wife said that that the husband's dead and Basin believed her. But I don't think so. And as far as I'm concerned, she's not testifying on my behalf. In fact, I'm stuck. So I know I'm stuck. Can I also now continue to benefit from assuming that my husband's alive? I.e., can I eat truma? Rabbi Tarfon says, sure. Now you think about it, you realize, Rabbi Tarfon, that's risky. That's a risky psak. Yeah, in other words, right, one wife is totally now of the impression and the halachic conclusion that her husband's dead, and this and the other co-wife is totally
follows the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that, you know,
understood. It's a
so he's not going out on a limb, he's like following the Mishnah.
Okay, but Rabbi Akiva Omer ein zederech motzia midei avera. Rabbi Akiva says, this is too risky for me. Rabbi Akiva says, no. You want to remove yourself from Avera, here's what you do. Rabbi Akiva says, she can't remarry the co-wife, and she can no longer continue to eat truma unless she finds out that her husband's actually alive. The Mishnah is going to sound like it's in a rinse-repeat cycle, because the Mishnah is going to do the same thing, but instead of a co-wife, the Mishnah is going to do it with a mother-in-law. Meaning the woman comes back and testifies, my husband died and my father-in-law died. So what's the halacha? She can remarry, but her mother-in-law cannot, because as we learned in yesterday's daf, you can't testify on behalf of your mother-in-law. And once again, what if the mother-in-law was married to a Kohen? So according to Rabbi Tarfon, let her continue eating truma. And once again, Rabbi Kiva says, no, the mother-in-law can't remarry, but also can't eat truma as well, for fear that maybe her husband actually is dead. The Gemara points out that I need both cases in the Mishnah. It's not a redundancy. The Havamina would have been, look, there are degrees of animosity. Co-wives really hate each other, and for obvious reason. They're sharing one husband. The mother-in-law, daughter-in-law hate one another, but it's an external factor. In other words, they're barbs at one another, right? But it's not the same degree of hatred. I might have thought that Rabbi Tarfon will say, look, a co-wife cannot testify on behalf of the other co-wife at all. They're sharing the same husband. Their hatred for each other is so strong that one testimony of one is not going to affect the other at all because the hatred is so strong. But maybe Rabbi Tarfon would agree to Rabbi Akiva in the case of daughter-in-law, mother-in-law. And then the Gemara just simply goes in the other direction. I might have said that Rabbi Akiva would hold his position by daughter-in-law, mother-in-law, but maybe by two co-wives, maybe he would agree to Rabbi Tarfon because their hatred for each other is so strong. Tzricha, therefore, they're needed. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, halachik Rabbi Tarfon. Gemara concludes, halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon, both in the case of the co-wife and the case of the mother-in-law. So one's testimony will not affect the other at all, and the other will still be allowed to even eat truma. I'm Rabbi Afanam Tanin. Rabbi says, look, I agree. Look at the following Mishnah. This is a Mishnah coming up on the Amud Beis, where the woman says that we went away together, and let me tell you some more information. And we had a son, and my son died, and then my husband died. Okay, that's a lot of reporting. Ne'emenes, she's believed. Ba'ali v'achakach b'ni eino ne'emenes. But if she testifies that her husband died, followed then by her son dying, which essentially what she's trying to get out is that she's no longer subject to the mitzvah of Yibum, choshishin ledvara, on one hand, we're worried about what she says, but v'choletzes v'lo misyabemes. But she's still, we're not going to let her off the hook of Yibum, so the brother-in-law is going to have to do chalitza, not Yibum. Ledvarehu, I'm sorry, just give me a moment. We're gonna come back to this case later on. The Gemara is just making one specific point. If she says that we're concerned, but had her co-wife said it, it would not have affected her at all. Shmami, now you see that when it comes to co-wives, a testimony of one will not impact the other, bichlal, as support for the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Okay. Let's continue. We are now on the top of Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis. Kiddush Echaz Mechamesh Nashim Ve'en Yodea Eze Kiddush. Okay, you want to say that romance is dead? It's alive and well. He goes over to a group of five women. He does Kiddushin to one of the five women. He just forgets which one he does Kiddushin with. So Kol Achaz Omeres Osi Kiddush. And every one of the women want to take advantage of this fantastic opportunity of being married. So each one of the women now make the claim that, yes, it was me. No, say get lechol achas ve'achas u'miniach suva beineihem u'mistalek divrei Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon says, so he's going to give a get to each one of them, so that get the get. He'll give the get to each one of them, so that they're divorced. And as far as the financial obligation of ksuva, look, ladies, I only married one of you. I only owe one of you the ksuva. I'll give the get to each one of you because, what is that? Okay, I have to pay a sofer four more times than I needed to. Okay. But I'm not going to give a ksuva to all five of you. That's crazy talk. So what I'll do is I'll give one ksuva payment. I'll put it on the floor. Count to three. By the count of three, I'll be out of the house, and then you ladies will decide who gets the ksuva. And how you make that decision, I'll leave that up to you. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Einzu Derech Motzi Midei Avera. Rabbi Akiva says, no. You want to extract yourself from Avera. Now, if you were wondering, why are we learning this Mishnah now? What does this have to do with anything? That language of Rabbi Akiva is exactly the same as the previous Mishnah. So, Einzu Derech Motzi Midei Avera, Chitain Gedu Ksuva Salachol Achavacha. You have to give a get and a ksuva to each one of them. Okay, Gazal Echa Mechamisha, a parallel scenario where you steal from one of five people. Bein Yodei Meizeh Gazal. However, you forgot who you stole from. So not only are you a thief, you're a bungling thief. You don't even know who the victim was. So Kol Echad Echad Omer Osi Gazal. Now each one of the victims, or possible victims, wants to take advantage of this wonderful opportunity, and they claim that each one of them claimed they're the victim. So Miniach Zela Beinayim Umistalek Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon, again, a very similar solution where he takes the stolen item, he puts it down on the ground, and he says, look, here I am, I want to do tshuva. I'm putting the stolen item down, I'm returning it to its owner. I don't remember which one of you are the owner. I know four of you are lying, so here's what I'll do. I put it down, I'll walk out of the house, and I'll let you figure out who, in fact, is the owner.
But
it would have
been only
the kefil is only if you get caught with the item. Here we're talking about a case where he's returning it on his own. Rabbi Akiva Omer in Zuderech Motzi Midei Avera Ashi Yishan L'chol Echa Ve'echad. And Rabbi Akiva says, no. Rabbi Akiva says, you want to be Motzi Midei Avera? You want to really do tshuva? You're going to have to give each one of the quote-unquote victims a compensation for the item which they claim was stolen from you. Granted, by the way, according to Rabbi Akiva, just look at it from the other perspective, you are rewarding four liars. Okay, but again, that's true. But turn back to the thief. The thief wants to do tshuva successfully. So then,
what about how much is the cover of
he stole, and he's admitting that he stole.
But the thing is that with the case of the husband and the five wives, don't they have to prove that?
They don't have to prove anything. He's admitting. Look, it's all on him. He's making an admission. He says, I was Mekadosh one of you. And he doesn't know which one. It's him that's creating the problem. He has a financial obligation.
If they want to collect, they got to take a
shavuot. No, again, there's no disagreement that he owes the money. The only issue is he just doesn't know who he owes the money to. And you have five people who are prepared now to say, it's me. So, by the way, let's point out the following. Rabbi Akiva's not saying that he actually owes all five. If I didn't make that point clear, so I'll do so right now. He doesn't owe all five. We understand that. But he wants to extract himself from Avera. He wants to be, after 120 years, he meets a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he wants to be totally free and clear of any wrongdoing. So as a penalty, as a kenas, he's going to pay all five. Okay? And part of the penalty is based on the fact that, look, the behavior to begin with was wrong behavior. It started with him stealing. It started him with being Mekadosh woman. Now, what I said is a little tricky. Just compared stealing to being Mekadosh a woman. Hold on that thought, because that's what we're gonna delve into right now. Kiddush ketani balo ketani gazo ketani lakach lo ketani mani masnitzin lo tadakamar v'lo Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar detanya. The Gemara notes that if you look carefully at the examples in our Mishnah, the example of marriage is kiddushin, not the second stage of marriage. The example of financial obligation started with theft, not with a simple purchase. The Mishnah could have done each one of these examples by marriage. It could have gone to all the way to Nisuin, i.e. Bia. By commerce, the Mishnah didn't have to do Gzela, could have done a purchase. I just don't know who I purchased it from. And five sellers are telling me that they're the one who sold it to me. And I don't know who I owe the money to. The Mishnah was very careful about the examples that it chose, but the examples don't match. The case of Kiddushin, no wrongdoing. The case of commerce, he stole it. There's wrongdoing. And it's not the same. And the Gemara makes this point. And the Gemara says, and it's really, there's no consistency. Ditanya, we learned in a brisa. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer. Lo nechlugu Rabbi Tav from Rabbi Kiva. Al she kiddush achas mechem hash nashim. Ve'inu yodei ze kiddush sheminich suva b'neimu mastaleik. Ama nechlugu al sheba'al. According to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, there is no debate that if all he did was just kiddushin, he doesn't have to pay all five women. Because he just did kiddushin. He wasn't boel any one of them. He didn't have relations with any one of them. He didn't, insult, injure, deface, in other words, he just was mekadosh one of them. So we're all in agreement, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, both Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon, he lays down one ksuva payment on the floor and he walks out. Where is the debate? Al-Shaba'al, where he had relations with one of the five. And oddly enough and awkwardly enough, he cannot identify which one. Give me a moment. That's where we have the debate. And let's continue. Lo nechlugu Rabbi Tav from Rabbi Kiva al shalakach mekach mechamesh b'nei adam ein yodei mezem lakach. And furthermore, if he bought an item from somebody, and again he cannot identify who bought it from, and five people are claiming they're the ones who sold it, so shemniach demei mekach b'nei mamestalek. Where there the solution is, and we're all in agreement, you put one payment down on the floor, you say, gentlemen, you work it out. But lo nechlugu ala shegazo mechamesha mechamisha. The only time there's a debate is where he stole from one of the five. Shamar Rabbi Tarfon sheminiach gzela b'nei mastalek Rabbi Kiva amar shisham gzela chol achav ve'achad. Now you see what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is doing. He's choosing two examples where they mimic one another. Where in the case of commerce, he stole from them. In the case of marriage, he had beer with one of them. So there was a wrongdoing. And in the case of marriage, what the wrongdoing is, he simply can't. He went to the extent where he actually, he was intimate with one of them. He doesn't know which one he was intimate with. So there's a machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon.
In the case of the marriage, doesn't the ketubah have the wife's name on it? They know who the wife is?
Okay, but we're just dealing with a conceptual scenario of we can't identify one. Maybe they all have the same name. Meaning, I don't know. But the point is that we're just looking conceptually at how what do you do to remove yourself from Avera?
What's the wrongdoing of Bia? He married us.
Wrongdoing in the sense that there's a defilement of...
I understand, for the women, but he didn't do anything wrong. He stole.
Correct. Right.
It's on a woman that he defiled.
He knows. He needs to know his wife is.
Yeah. I mean, okay. He obviously they can't walk away from this scenario. Meaning, just like the person who was stolen from, you can't say he was wronged. It's not exactly the same, but they're similar. Now, so now, look, all this was the viewpoint of Rosh Hashanah, which means, of course, that the Tanakhama disagrees. Now, if the Tanakhama disagrees, obviously, which two examples would the Tanakhama choose? He would choose the examples of Kiddushin and Mekach. And here now becomes the problem. Our Mishnah chooses two examples, Kiddushin and Gzela. That's inconsistent. Either the Mishnah should have chosen Kiddushin and Mekach, which are more parallel to one another, or Bia and Gzela, which are more parallel to one another. So money eat on a kama lifting kiddush v'lakach. E Rabbi Shimon Elazar lifting ba'al v'gazal. That's the problem. The examples in the Mishnah are inconsistent. La'olam Rabbi Shimon Elazar my kiddush b'bia. So the Gemara says the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon Elazar. And when our Mishnah talks about kiddushin, it's talking about kiddushin done through bia. Tana kiddush l'adicha kochin de Rabbi Akiva de Afagav de Yisur de Rabban Anavad Kanis. Here, what did he do? I'll tell you what he did wrong. He violated an Issa Derabbanan. Even though Kiddushin Bibiya is an acceptable way to be Mekadesh, but the rabbi said it's unacceptable. When we get to Masechta Kiddushin, we're going to learn together that it is not a preferred way to be Mekadesh a woman. Even though I know it's hashkafically a little strange. The Torah allows it, and the Chachamim came along and said, we're going to disallow it. In fact, the Gemara Kedushin says, Rashi over here quotes it, Rav Mangid Aman de Mekadosh Bebiya. Rav gave lashes to somebody who was Mekadosh a woman with Bia. You're violating Nisar Durabanan. And Gazal Odecha Kochad Rabbi Tafan Davagav Disur Dar Raisa Avid Lokanis. And Gzela, that's stealing from somebody, is a Torah prohibition.
But in either case, the woman can't get remarried.
Again, not. I understand that, but right now that's not the focus of the discussion. Focus of the discussion is, what does a man need to do now to extract himself from Avera? So what our Mishnah is teaching us is that if he got into this through an Avera, and it doesn't matter the degree of Avera, whether it's an Issa Derabbanan or whether it's an Issa Deraisa, if he got through this with an Avera, the only way now he can extract himself from it is to pay each one of them according to Rabbi Kiva, or to put the money down and to walk out according to Rabbi Tarfon. Okay. At Khan, that will stop over here. Tomorrow on Shabbos, we'll pick it up from the Mishnah.